There's a scene in the movie Field of Dreams when Kevin Costner is asking Burt Lancaster about his character's Major League Baseball career, which lasted one half of one inning. Lancaster describes it with his forefinger and thumb about 2 inches apart, saying, "It was like coming this close to your dreams and then watching them brush past you like a stranger in a crowd." I've always thought the same premise would apply to the bands that went down in history as one-hit wonders. The one-hit wonder is just exactly that, a band or a performer who had one really big hit and then never repeated that sort of success ever again. Some are overnight sensations, others toil long and hard to get to the peak of their career, only to see it quickly recede. For some, it's because of self-destructive behavior. For others, it happens due to circumstances beyond their control. While some are truly talented individuals who never got their timing right, others are folks who just plain got lucky and happened to be in the right place at the right time. Either way, there's an underlying respect associated with the term. After all, these are people who did have success, if only for a moment. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame even has a permanent exhibit dedicated to one-hit wonders. They may only have been on the charts for half an inning, but at least these folks got to the big leagues. My name is Rich Larson. This is the Weekly List. Good evening, everybody. You're listening to 95.1 KYMN Radio in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Thank you for joining us once again on another edition of the Weekly List. All right. So what's the deal? Why are we talking about one-hit wonders this week? Because on this day, April 23rd, 1983, Dexy's Midnight Runners hit number one on the Billboard charts in America with Come On Eileen. That song would stay there for exactly 1 week, but it accomplished something that seemingly no one else ever would have thought possible back then. It stopped Michael Jackson, if only for a minute. Come On Eileen supplanted Billie Jean as the number one song in the country after a 7-week run, and would be replaced the very next week by Michael Jackson and beat it. So in addition to having a number one song, Dexy's Midnight Runners prevented Michael Jackson from having back-to-back number one songs, which is something that I don't think has ever been accomplished, actually, to this day. And let's put this all into context and perspective here, too. Michael Jackson, for those of you who are, you know, below the age of, I don't know, I suppose 30, Michael Jackson had become the biggest star in the world in 1983. The success of his Thriller album was a little bit dizzying, actually. It had launched him to a level of stardom that had not been seen really, I think, since the Beatles arrived in America. So for little tiny Dexy's Midnight Runners, whose style is best maybe associated with a pair of dirty coveralls, for this band to even interrupt that moonwalking, sparkling glove giant was no small feat. And that sort of David versus Goliath story should always be celebrated. So that's what we're going to do here tonight. The first song we heard tonight was That Thing You Do by The Wonders, a fictional band contrived by Mr. Tom Hanks to be just exactly what their names told you they were. That Thing You Do, of course, is also the title of the movie that Hanks directed, about a band that experiences the whirlwind of success from winning a local talent show to appearing on national television in the matter of just a few months, only then to see it all come crashing down again just that quickly. The song itself was written by a guy named Adam Schlesinger, who you probably and unfortunately have heard about lately. Schlesinger was a songwriter best known for his work with the band Fountains of Wayne and on the television show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Adam Schlesinger recently passed away after having contracted the coronavirus and subsequently developing COVID-19. I was a big fan of Schlesinger's work, and his music, I will deeply miss his music, and we want to send out condolences to his loved ones and his family and his friends. Our next song is actually it's kind of a head scratcher in that it's a proto spiritual, Praising Jesus, written by a guy raised as an Orthodox Jew. But to hear Norman Greenbaum talk about Spirit in the Sky, it makes perfect sense. He has said that he just thought the Christian viewpoint was more marketable. And, you know, he always loved spirituals and he wanted to write a song like that. And there's no law that says you have to adhere to the gospel to enjoy the music. He's also pointed out that as a writer, you're allowed to adopt the viewpoint of another person. So there it is. The song got as high as number 3 on the Billboard charts in 1970, but has since been used in a staggering 30 commercials and 60 movies. Even though Norman Greenbaum was never able again to really match the success of the song on the charts, it's allowed him to not keep a day job for many, many years. So, from 1970, here is Norman Greenbaum with Spirit in the Sky, a 95.1 KYMN.
When I lay me down. bus.
This here's a jam for all the fellas. Try to do what those ladies tell us. Get shot down cause you're overzealous. Play hard to get females, get jealous. Okay, smarty, go to a party. Girls are scantily clad, are showing body. A chick walks by, you wish you could sex her, but you're standing on the wall like you was Poindexter. Next day's function, high class luncheon. Food is served and you're stone cold munching. Music comes on, people start to dance, but then you ate so much you nearly split your pants. A girl starts walking, guys start gawking. Sits down next to you and starts talking. Says she wanna dance cause she likes to groove. So come on, fatso, and just bust the move. The move. You're on a mission and you're wishing someone could cure your lonely condition. Looking for love in all the wrong places. No fine girls, just ugly faces. From frustration, first inclination is to become a monk and leave the situation. But every dark tunnel has a light of hope, so don't hang yourself with a celibate rope. New movie showing, so you're going. Less about the five you're blowing. Theater gets dark just to start the show. Then you spot a fine woman sitting in your row. She's dressed in yellow. She says, hello, come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, bust a move. Just bust a move. City. Ladies look pretty, guys tell jokes so they can seem witty. Tell a funny joke just to get some play, then you try to make a move and she says no way. Girls are faking, goodness saking, they want a man who brings home the bacon. Got no money and you got no car, then you got no woman, and there you are. Some girls are sadistic, materialistic, looking for a man makes them opportunistic. They're lying on the beach perpetrating a tan so that a brother with money can be their man. So on the beach you're strolling, real high rolling, everything you have is yours and not stolen. A girl runs up with something to prove, so don't just stand there and bust a move. Has a brother Larry. In 5 days from now he's gonna marry. He's hoping you can make it there if you can, cause in the ceremony you'll be the best man. You say neato, check your libido and roll to the church in your new tuxedo. The bride walks down just to start the wedding, and there's one more girl you won't be getting. So you start thinking, then you start blinking. A bridemaid looks and thinks that you're winking. She thinks you're kinda cute, so she winks back. And now you're feeling really firm cause the girl is stacked. Reception's jumping, bass is pumping. Look at the girl and your heart starts thumping. Says she wanna dance to a different groove. Now you don't want to do G, bust the move.
Young, better known as Young MC, with his 1989 hit, Bust a Move. Young MC may be a one-hit wonder, but don't feel too bad for old Marv. Along with the royalties that he continues to collect from Bust a Move, Young also collects royalties on the songs Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina, which he co-wrote with Tone Loke. Marvin also has a degree in economics from USC and has sort of made a side career out of winning celebrity game, celebrity versions of game shows like Weakest Link and Celebrity Fit Club. These days, Mr. Young lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, continues to make music, but there's nothing he's ever really done that comes even close to the success of Bust a Move. So now we move much closer to home and take a trip back to a strange time called the late 1970s. For decades now, Minneapolis music fans have really taken pride in the song Funky Town, thinking that the city referred to in the title is Minneapolis. But that isn't the case. The story goes that Steve Greenberg, who still is a Twin Cities musician and producer, he had been signed to a developmental deal by Casablanca Records, which was a huge label in the 1970s. They had Kiss and Donna Summer, who were like the two biggest acts in the world by about 1978. They were both on Casablanca Records. Greenberg put together a group of local session players, including David Ribkin, who was the brother of Bobby Ribkin, who later took the name Bobby Z and was the drummer in The Revolution, and vocalist Cynthia Johnson. And they made an album under the name Lips Inc. and released Funky Town, which became an international hit, spending 4 weeks at number one in June of 1980 in the United States, and it hit number one in 11 other countries from Spain to New Zealand. But the song, it's not the love letter to the Twin Cities that everyone seems to think it is. In fact, it's really the opposite. Greenberg has said that he wrote Funky Town out of frustration with Minneapolis because it was a sleepy, cold little town where nothing ever really happened, and he wanted to move to New York, which was the place where, you know, that was the town that will keep him moving, keep him grooving with some energy. In this, that's, you know, as he writes in the song, whatever. I still love that synthesized vocal in the second chorus. Here's Lip Sync with Funky Town on 95.1 KYMF.
to
Funkin' Town.
Won't you take me to
Funkin' Town?
Won't you take me to
Funkin'
Mrs. Jones, which is a song that spent 3 weeks at number one in the December of 1972. It's a gorgeous slice of Philly soul that was written by the songwriting team of Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff, and Tom Bell, and then was produced by Gamble and Huff. Billy Paul was a guy who played around Philadelphia for nearly 20 years, first recorded in 1952. And then he was drafted in the Army in 1957 and was stationed in Germany, where not only did he serve alongside Private Elvis Presley, he also played in an Army band with some pretty major jazz heavy hitters, including horn players Don Ellis and Leo Wright and guitar player Ron Anthony. Billy Paul was an incredibly versatile vocalist. He was an incredibly versatile vocalist, not just in jazz, but he could do doo-wop and obviously he could do soul too. And that's really the music he created. His sound was sort of an amalgamation of that jazz doo-wop soul thing. Spent some time with Harold Melvin as a member of the legendary Blue Notes, and he was a lifelong friend of Marvin Gaye. Gamble and Huff, they spent quite a bit of time with Billy Paul. They made a number of albums with him, and Paul actually followed those guys to three different record labels until they finally hit with Me and Mrs. Jones. And then they just never really made it work again. Which is, you know, something that happens. Next up, we have a song the New York Times once called, quote, an emblem of the new wave era in rock and a prime example of the brevity of pop fame, unquote. Now, the New York Times was mostly right, because the song is definitely a prime example of new wave pop. In fact, I've always really felt that this is one of those songs that bridges the gap between the testosterone-fueled rock of the 1970s and the guitar-driven pop of the early 1980s. But the whole thing about fleeting fame, I mean, I don't know about that, because it's true that The Knack never had another big hit. But honest to God, 40 years after it left the charts, who doesn't know the song My Sharona? The Knack, though, they're also a little bit of a cautionary tale. Lead singer Doug Feiger had some early success with a band from Michigan called Sky. And after they dissolved, he moved to L.A., met a guitarist named Bertrand Aver, and the two of them began writing together, and they formed The Knack. And then after gaining a reputation as a good live band, they were able to leverage that success into a recording company bidding war, and had no less than 10 different record companies trying to sign them, which is great, but it also really raises expectations. Now, what might have been one of their biggest mistakes is they signed with Capitol Records. Capitol had been the Beatles record company in America, and the company's executives, after, you know, feeling so great about having won this bidding war and they've signed this just, you know, great new band, decided that they were going to market The Knack as a new wave version of the Beatles. The cover of their debut album was really reminiscent of the Beatles' second album, Meet the Beatles. And Feiger and Aver were compared in a bunch of the marketing materials that were sent out. They were compared to Lennon and McCartney. The press, naturally, became pretty critical of the way the band was being presented. And the other huge mistake that the band made was that when the critics came out, the band fought back. And there's an old adage that says, never pick a fight with someone who buys their ink in 50-gallon drums. There was a backlash against the band that they just really never overcame. Now, My Sharona was the biggest hit record of 1979. It was the number one song of the year. But by the time the year was over, the Knack had become public laughingstocks. And it's really a shame because, you know, Figer and Avert were not Lennon and McCartney, but they were a good band who really might have had a long and successful career if it hadn't been for some boneheaded decisions made by and for them. Anyway, here's the Knack with My Sharona on 95.1 KYMN, The One.
We'll be right back. Delilah, what's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. Yes, you do. Times Square can't shine as bright as you. I swear it's true. Hey there, Delilah, don't you worry about the distance. I'm right there if you get lonely. Give this song another listen. Close your eyes. Listen to my voice, it's my disguise. I'm by your side. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. What you do to me. Hey there, Delilah, I know times are getting hard, but just believe me, girl, someday I'll pay the bills with this guitar. We'll have it good. We'll have the life we knew we would. My word is good. Hey there, Delilah, I've got so much left to say. If every simple song I wrote to you take your breath away, I'd write it all. Even more in love with me, you'd fall. We'd have it all. Oh, it's what you do to me. 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 1,000 miles seems pretty far, but they've got planes and trains and cars. I'd walk to you if I had no other way. Our friends would all make fun of us, and we'll just laugh along, because we know that none of them have felt this way. Delilah, I can promise you that by the time we get through, the world will never ever be the same, and you're to blame. Delilah, you be good and don't you miss me. 2 more years and you'll be done with school, and I'll be making history like I do. You'll know it's all because of you. We can do whatever we want to. Hey there, Delilah, here's to you. This one's for you. What you do to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. What you do to me.
Weekly List. I'm your host, Rich Larson. That was Plain White Tees with Hey There Delilah, which was a number one song in America for 3 weeks during the summer of 2007. Delilah is Delilah DiCrescenzo, who's a successful New York area track and cross-country athlete. She met Plain White Tees singer and songwriter Tom Higginson through some mutual friends. The two never dated or had any sort of romantic relationship. Higginson he liked the name, and so her name, and so he got his signature song out of it. I was honestly surprised and disappointed to find out that he and Delilah were never really a thing, because, I mean, that song just, it sucked me in. So, okay, it's time to update you on what's happening at Imminent Brewing this week. As always, I want to thank Imminent for sponsoring the Weekly List. For those of you who do not know, Imminent is considered an essential business during the stay-at-home order because they have an off-sale liquor license. Off-sale meaning that they can sell you beer they can sell you beer to take off-site and to drink at home. All of their beer is available right now in 64-ounce growlers and 750-milliliter howlers. The first thing we have to talk about very quickly is a policy shift with regard to dogs. Everyone at Imminent loves your dog, and they have always been really proud of the fact that they're able to invite your dog into the tap room. However, the CDC has issued some new guidelines, and they are now recommending the same sort of social distancing from dogs that they have been recommending with people. Because of that, until further notice, dogs are not going to be allowed inside Imminent Brewing. For at least the near future, they can still be on the patio if you're waiting for food from a truck, but they cannot come inside anymore. You know, it's just another really sad fact of reality. But Imminent is committed to keeping all of their customers and their staff safe as we just work through this weird, strange situation. So sorry, but the it's a bummer, but the pooches have to stay outside for a while. With that said, you should also know that you can now order beer online through their website at imminentbrewing.com. Just go to the website, click on the box that talks about ordering. It's all pretty simple and straightforward. When you go to pick it up, if you don't want to go inside, give them a call. They'll bring the beer out to you. You do have to get out of your car because state law does not allow them to sell you beer while you are seated in a motor vehicle. Also, you do need to be prepared to show your ID and prove you're at least 21 years of age. They do have food trucks coming in. Friday, Norris Cuisine will be there, followed by Uncle B's Last Chance Barbecue Shack on Saturday and Russell's Traveling Kitchen on Sunday. And then next Thursday, Potter's Pasties will be there. Imminent is open these days Tuesday through Sunday. Tuesday through Friday, their hours are 4 to 7 p.m., and on Saturday and Sunday, they're open 2 to 7. Obviously, they would love to have the tap room open to the public, but for now, until the stay-at-home order is lifted, those are the standard hours. If you want any more information, give them a call at 507-646-2327 or visit imminentbrewing.com. So our next song is sort of a 90s feminist anthem and one of those like reclaiming of a word moments. Meredith Brooks wrote Bitch with Shelley Piken, who after years and years as a Nashville contract songwriter had never had one of her songs released as a single. So she's driving home one night and feeling particularly frustrated when these words just sort of formed in her head. The idea was that, you know, being a bitch, I mean, that didn't mean you're some crazy hormonal freak or, you know, whatever. It meant that you were tough and strong and you know what you wanted. So she said, I quote, "I immediately thought of an artist I had recently been introduced to named Meredith Brooks. We got together in a little room without a boombox or a drum loop, just with an acoustic guitar, and the next day she had a record deal." Unquote. Now, when I first heard the song, I loved it, but more importantly, my wife loved it, and it now actually makes me think of a lesson that she taught our daughters. When people say you're a bitch, you look back at them and say, "You say that like it's a bad thing." Here's Meredith Brooks with her one rather important hit on 95.1 KYMN.
I hate the world today. You're so good to me, I know, but I can't change. Tried to tell you, but you look at me like maybe I'm an angel underneath, innocent and sweet. Yesterday I cried. You must have been relieved to see the softer side. I can understand how you'd be so confused. I don't envy you. I'm a little bit of everything. I'll roll into one. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel may mean you'll have to be a stronger man. Rest assured that when I start to make you nervous and I'm going to extremes, tomorrow I will change and today won't mean a thing. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm your hell, I'm your dream, I'm nothing in between. You know you wouldn't want it any other way. Thank you.
That was the Kingsmen with Louie Louie, a song that was in the Billboard Top 10 for 2 months in 1963 and 1964. The fact that nobody could understand a word that singer Jack Ely was saying created all sorts of rumors that the lyrics were filled with profanity and salacious stories of depraved behavior. In fact, the governor of Indiana at the time banned the song from all the radio stations in his state. And the FBI launched a 31-month investigation into exactly what was being said in those lyrics. As it turns out, the song is just, it's a simple one about a Jamaican sailor who's trying to get home. And the reason the words are unintelligible is because the microphone that Ely sang into in the studio had been raised too high and it couldn't pick up what was being said very clearly. The FBI. Anyway, next up is a song by Tommy Two-Tone that created the most famous phone number in history. Story behind Jenny 867-5309 is that there is no story. Even though Tommy Heath and Jim Keller, who are the duo that made up Tommy Two-Tone, for years both claimed to have known Jenny and that really was her phone number, the truth is a lot more boring. Keller co-wrote the song with a guy named Alex Call, who had been in a band called Clover that was best known for working with Elvis Costello on his first album. Call said that he'd been messing around with an idea for the song for a while. He had the number, he had the melody, and he had the guitar riff, but he just didn't know what to do with it all. It was Keller who had the idea to make it about a girl's phone number written on a bathroom wall, and that was it. They wrote it, Keller took it to Heath, they recorded it, and suddenly people were having to change their phone numbers all over the country. Evidently, there are a number of 80s-themed businesses that still use that number. There's an 80s-themed pizza place in Colorado. There's a retro fitness place in Florida, all using 867-5309. Anyway, now that the song is stuck in your head, here's Tommy Two-Tone off their album Two-Tone 2 from 1981. On 95.1 KYMN, The One.
Saw your name and number.
And that was the inspiration for this week, Dexy's Midnight Runners with Come On Eileen, which is actually a song we've all been singing lately, since you can replace the title with the words COVID-19. Sign of the times. Well, folks, that's going to just about do it for this edition of the Weekly List. If you like the show and you want to hear more, you can visit our program page on the KYMN website at kymnradio.net, or you can find our Facebook page under the Weekly List, where I post every new show every Friday morning. You should also go and like the KYMN Facebook page. I've been noticing a lot of people returning to Facebook during the time of Corona. And if you are going to spend some time there, KYMN, it's almost vitally important that you go like the KYMN page. Jeff Johnson and Terry Knight are working like crazy to keep us updated on what's going on with schools and the hospitals and local government and local businesses. It's just the best source for all of your local news, and everything lands on that Facebook page. So give them a like. And also go like the Imminent Brewing Facebook page as well, because someday that tap room is going to reopen. And when it does, there's going to be all kinds of cool stuff happening, and you're going to know about it. And actually, there might be some cool stuff happening even before the tap room reopens, and you're going to want to know about that too. So go like the Imminent Brewing Facebook page as well, and see that there might be some surprises headed your way. We're going to leave you tonight with a request. Since I began this show, my bartending colleague, Jonathan Tran, has asked me quite often, when are you going to play tub thumping? Because evidently that's the only music he knows is dub thumping and most of the Smash Mouth catalog. This show seems to be the most opportune time to fill that request. I don't know what the song is about. I know it was written by a British band called Chumbawamba. If it is anything more than a pub crawling drinking song, I don't really want to know, nor do I really care. I want to apologize to all of you who tuned into the show looking for great music, because dub thumping is not it. But Jonathan, this is for you. From 1997, this is Chumbawamba with tub thumping. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Peace.